Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast that talk about the special women that really inspire us and the ones that we aspire to or really want to be. Whether success is in their business, their attitude, or in their professional and personal achievements, we want to learn just that little bit more about them. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Kathleen Saxton. Hello, Kathleen. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a delight, especially in these amazing offices of tranquility and candles. I'm calm already.
We do our best. I think it's important, isn't it, to feel ourselves. So trying to create an environment that makes people feel that they can just relax is really important.
Mm-hmm. So Kathleen Saxton has worked in media sales for large companies such as Sky and Capital, on the Virgin Radio board, in brand planning, and even set up her own headhunting company. Kathleen, thanks for your time. Now, women will be greatly influenced by your leadership and psychotherapy programs. Can you please share a bit about them?
Of course. So having been a headhunter for about 11 years, we have lots of people that come and sit with us on a daily basis. We interview about 5,000 leaders a year. So we have a lot of people coming in and out of the Lighthouses program. And actually what we discovered was people were willing as the years go on to be much more open about their leadership style, their vulnerability, things that were challenging them in life, personally and professionally. And having trained as a psychotherapist, my view was, can we bring some of that into what we do professionally to allow people to be more self-discovered as to what it is they really want to be, who they are, and can we support them beyond the day-to-day coaching leadership styles and actually think about who they are within and whether or not they can reconnect with who they're meant to be.
That sounds fabulous. And you did that training with the lovely Ruby Wax we've both met, is that right?
I didn't train in the same year as her, but we both trained initially at Regent's University in London, which is an amazing campus actually if you're training to be a psychotherapist. I went on to train further at CCPE in London, which is a different transpersonal training. But yeah, Ruby and I think probably had the same tutors for a while.
I like that, transpersonal.
Well, transpersonal is about the spiritual. So it's not just the current journey, the current story, but the bigger picture of who you are. So holistically, kind of mind, body and spirit, the whole thing together. And having come from the corporate world or being in the corporate world, I used to tease my fellow students with me that it was all a bit brown rice and sandals for me. But do you know what? I really fell in love with the method of thinking about who we're meant to be beyond the day to day. What are we here for? You know, what are we on this planet for? And what's going to be our story bigger than just our job?
That's fascinating. And what are you here for?
I think I'm here to connect people. I think I'm a connector in general. I think that's why in the industry, having come up through media sales, it's a very social job, as anybody will know in this industry. But also it's about trust and it's about building relationship and it's about really understanding and being able to really listen to what people are really saying or indeed not saying. And I think as a headhunter, it's a similar thing. You're matchmaking in some ways to sort of try and find out whether, as I would say, the body doesn't reject the organ, that somebody can really flourish in a business that they're in, male or female. And also then as a psychotherapist, how can people, again, really be comfortable with who they are inside and out, to be a little bit more introspective at times as to what it is they want in life, and can we help them to get it?
Fascinating. So it's definitely a culture thing as well, isn't it?
I think, you know, with my business partner in Psyched is a guy called Ben Mackay, and I think our view is that it's world work. It sounds a bit worthy, but I think from our little corner of the media and advertising and entertainment industry, we should be doing more to really encourage. We have a duty of care, don't we? We have a duty of care to ourselves, and we have a duty of care to those that we work with and around, or people that we lead, to really try and create an environment whereby we can be very honest about who we are. And I think as Brits, we sometimes struggle with that. I think in the States, everybody's got a psych, you know, they're all very happy about having a shrink or a psych or somebody who is supporting them with their mental well-being, their mental performance. I think in the UK, we're absolutely terrified and stigmatized by the thought that we might be mentally ill. And actually, it's not always about that. Sometimes it may be about that. We all struggle from time to time, but it's more about being more of what we're meant to be. And I think that's why Psyched has really formed in our industry.
Definitely. I think it's that bring the barriers down, isn't it? Reaching out, finding your inner American.
Absolutely.
I love that.
We all have an inner American, surely.
Let's dig deep. We've talked about Regent's University. You co-founded a new company, Psyched Global, I love the name, last year to offer these executive development programs. And do you want to tell us a bit more about how that works?
Yeah, so our fundamental belief was we needed to take people out of their normal environment out of the office, out of even where they live, and take them somewhere where they could reconnect with nature, which again sounds a bit brown rice and sandals, but it's not, because we're all made up of the elements of, you know, air, wind, earth and fire, if you like. And our sense was being in and around nature reconnects you with who you really are internally. And so our program consists as we have doctors, nutritionists, psychotherapists, coaches. We have a Shaolin master, a genuine Shaolin master who teaches Qigong form as the sun rises every morning and as the sun sets every night. We have a Chinese masseuse, acupuncturist. So we're working on every single element of you from morning till night for 5 days. We have one program in the south of France, one in the desert. And we're finding that businesses are sending their chief execs, their chief revenue officers, people who are really under pressure leading businesses these days, to just come away from everything for 5 days and come and work with us. So there's pre-work in the sense of what's stress doing to you, what's anxiety doing to you. We all, you know, stress is here to stay, unfortunately. So the question is, how can we learn to cope with it better and to be with it better? So before we even go away with them, they have a psychotherapy session. We test their nutrition. We do spit tests. We do ECG tests. Just testing. You know, you may have thought you had a good night's sleep last night, for example, Nikki, but actually it may have been that when we look at your ECG gram, we can see that actually you were disturbed 3 or 4 times and that your deep sleep wasn't really there. We just don't know. So some people, for example, particularly in the media industry, may say, oh, I went out last night with the girls and had, you know, 5 glasses of white wine. It was fabulous. I had a brilliant laugh. And you probably did. But you may have found the stimulant of that drinking has disturbed your sleep, even though you thought or hoped it was going to knock you out for a few hours. So trying to educate people in what is it we're putting in our bodies? What is it we're doing to our minds and our bodies? And how are we really feeling? All of that comes out in these 5-day programs. The piece that people get anxious about when they see the program is we have every morning and every evening, we also have group therapy for an hour and a half. And again, in the UK, we associate group therapy with Alcoholics Anonymous or a program like that, which does incredible work. But if you're not an alcoholic, you probably don't feel that you want to do group therapy. Group therapy is all about understanding our own projections, and we tend to project things onto other people that we're not able to tolerate within ourselves or can't accept within ourselves. So when we do group work, and particularly on these retreats, often they're with groups on the same board, or they could be from individuals from other businesses. There's initially lots of anxiety about revealing ourselves to these people. But what happens is somebody is vulnerable very early and everybody else is then very comfortable to realise that we all think we're a little bit strange. We all think we're a little bit weird. We all think we're not coping. We all think it's a bit too tough. But actually, we're all pretty much feeling the same. And the support and encouragement that can come from that is just incredible.
Fabulous. You're glowing with vitality. They can't see it, but they can imagine it. You evolve from working with brands and then finding others their right career with your own headhunting company. Did it take a lot of grit and determination to get where you wanted to be?
It absolutely did. And I always say to people that are looking at entrepreneurial adventures, it's the best thing I've ever done. I recommend it highly, but it takes a huge amount of backbone. It takes a lot of risk. And a lot of self-belief. And sometimes there are absolutely moments when you first start out a business and even a couple of years in when you sort of think, what on earth am I doing? And it'd just be much easier to take a salary job somewhere else and keep my head down. But if you have that call of the wild, which I did, I didn't think I would. It was never in my plan to set my own company up. So my father had his own company, which he lost when we were 11. And we lost our house. We were evicted from our home when I was 11, my brother and I and my mother. So I've really experienced the proper dark side of a business going wrong and financial matters not being okay. And maybe that's given me the courage to think, well, I could survive it again if I had to. I don't plan to, but I guess I know how to live on a shoestring. I know how to live in a cardboard box. And so therefore, maybe there's something in that which alerts me to the risk, but makes me feel that I would survive it. So it was tricky setting up. I didn't take any investment. I saved up some money from a previous business I worked in and decided to take the leap. But the leap came because I could really see a gap in the market. And my chairman, who's a great guy called Nick Horswell, said to me, that's great, but is there a market in the gap? You have to be certain there is a market in what you think you can do. And actually, it was, you know, there are many, many headhunters in the world, and some of them are superb and some less so. But my view was that if we could change the reputation of headhunting to be a really positive thing, so there was a bigger altruistic aim, but also to be deeply personal in the way that we represented people, a bit like a talent agent, if you like, both for our clients and for our candidates, that we could make people feel differently about being represented. And in our industry, as you know, there's a real paucity of fantastic, authentic, transformational talent. And there's lots and lots of brilliant people coming up the ranks. But I think because of technology, there are lots of people that are also becoming rather obsolete, and that's quite frightening for them as well. So trying to spot people that are enthusiastic, curious, driven, willing, we talk about, you know, suffering the riptide of transformational leadership. You've got to dive into those choppy waters at the moment, particularly in technology and media, and just swim like hell and learn like hell to get to the point where you can understand what the future may hold. And they're the people that we like to champion. So being close enough to them, being trusted by them, you have to earn that, and you have to demonstrate human traits and human nature that makes them feel that you're genuinely invested in them emotionally, not just financially.
Fantastic. So here's to the innovators of the future. Now, when you co-founded Advertising Week Europe, you had thousands of attendees collaborating. Do you think collaborations are the future?
Collaboration, to me, is everything about the future. I think even in our industry of media, you know, if you are one television station or one radio company, for example, and you continue to only work alone, it's only going to get harder. I think the creativity comes from collaboration. The willingness to even find better, funner, mischievous commercial operations often come from collaborating with others. So trying to bring down these walls of fear that we have that someone's trying to eat our lunch, but instead figure out a win-win for companies to work together. Because in the end, in our industry, I think it's all about audience, isn't it? And the audience can come from any platform. So it's about working with like-minded people, trusting in each other, understanding the commercial reality of that, and finding a way to make it work. I think hiding in our cubbyholes and hoping for the best is no longer a way that can work. It really has changed.
That's interesting. And certainly the radio industry that I'm in, you know, is like that, in that they say there's room for everyone.
Everyone, I think, and the RAB, for example, have done an incredible job of really celebrating all the benefits of radio. And I think for a number of years now, that's become very solid in clients' minds. But I think, again, it's world work, isn't it? Because if we think about the factions in our society around ethnicity or religion or us not understanding each other, it's only in working together and educating each other that we begin to understand each other better, and then brilliant things happen. When we try and hold out and withdraw, that's where things go wrong.
Isn't that interesting? And in fact, this collaboration for this podcast, I was introduced to you by my co-producer, Juliet Nichols from Global Radio. And that's why we're here today.
Absolutely so. And I think as leaders, and actually as women in business as well, our networks and our willingness to grow those and to be curious and just to spend some time with people that you may or may not ever do business with, it's amazing what comes from that. And I remember when I came to speak at Global, talking about, I believe in the currency of favours as well. So if somebody asks me a favour, I'll always try and do one. It's rare that I want to ask one back, but when I do it very carefully. And there's a wonderful sense of goodwill and promise in paying that forward in other ways as well. So networks don't just have to be about the day-to-day commercial operation. They're also just about learning about each other as well. Great beauty in that.
You got a lovely way of thinking. Now, we'd like to know more about what makes you tick and your true passions. You've talked about psychotherapy. What's been the proudest moment of your career?
Every time I launch a business, so when we've done Psyched or Lighthouse or Adweek, there's an immense sense of pride. And the only thing I can ever relate it to is the morning after I've got two children, and I remember the morning after having both of them, sort of lying in hospital with them both on my sort of knees, thinking, oh my goodness, like I've actually had a baby. And the miracle of that, of course, but the sense of pride of being able to have done something. And there is something that, unfortunately for men, only women can talk about if you are lucky enough or want to have children. There's no other feeling than realizing that you have created something and given birth to it. And I have to say, in business, there's a similar, of course it's different to some degree, but there's a sense of, I had this idea and I conceived it and I grew it and then I launched it and here it is. And there's something overwhelmingly wonderful about that sense of pride. And it doesn't matter how many people tell you something's great or not, unless you feel it, for me, it doesn't really count. So I'm very much driven by my own measure of what's good and what's not good, which sometimes can be, and I can beat myself up too. But that launching things, bringing something to market and it existing and being understood by other people is the greatest achievement that I have.
Oh, wonderful. And I didn't realise you were a mum. And you do speakers for schools programmes, is that right, with the government?
I do. You're well researched, Nikki. So speakers for schools I actually got involved in via the Advertising Association. Again, another, you know, conversation over dinner with someone and accidentally said we're doing this program for speakers for schools, which is, I think, is an incredible program to have. We didn't have it when I was at school, obviously eons ago, where you go into various schools and just, I mean, different people do it different ways, but I mean, I always do a talk about becoming what you want to be and having your own brand. And thankfully, in some ways, my backstory being so dark and difficult is probably quite easy for them to, some of them to relate to, which is I haven't come from some fabulous background and my mum and dad are in the industry. I have no connections to the industry. I literally was a secretary and sort of worked my way up. It's one of those classic stories. And I always show them a clip from those two films. So The Secret of My Success, when Michael J. Fox is in the post room, and also Melanie Griffith's Working Girl, when she's sort of the PA that becomes the boss. And that is the story of my life. And I think you can be influenced actually by films like that, where you realise that if you kick hard enough in a positive way, I think you can become anything you wanted to be. Now, I became a psychotherapist later on in my career, and I've managed to do it whilst running a company. If you really want something, you'll find the way to do it.
So can we share a bit more about your passions? I gather you've got a musical outlet.
I am music mad. And I think having spent 4 or 5 years in the radio industry, it's no surprise. So my dad was very musical. He was a pianist and an organist and a choir master. So I was in choirs when I was a little girl for many, many years. But they encouraged me to learn the flute and the piano. And my brother played the piano and the cello. So we're a very musical family. And because my dad was a pianist, he would always play at my auditions and my concerts and stuff. So it was lovely to have an anchoring of someone that I knew to play with me. I got a scholarship to music school when I was very young, which I think saved me from, I grew up in a very rough part of Kent, and I think I probably could have, you know, gone the wrong side of the tracks. I think my music, actually, because I was at music school every weekend and I was touring with orchestras and stuff like that, I think it gave me two things. It allowed me to realise I could be good at something that my colleagues weren't. So there's a bit of sense of pride that I knew I had the talent. And although I desperately would rather have been a ballerina or something else, I can't dance for toffee, but actually music was my thing. Then in my adult life, I just get such a thrill out of going to see live music. I'm a member at Ronnie Scott's, which makes me sound really ancient. I'm quite ancient, but I'm not that ancient. But I love jazz, soul, funk, all of that kind of music I absolutely adore. But I also love classical. I'll go to the Barbican, I'll go to St. John Smith Square, I'll go to St. Martin's in the Fields for lunchtime concerts. If I can, I'll always go and see live music. And again, actually, I think it does relate a bit to business, because I know what it's like to stand on a stage in front of hundreds of people and have to deliver a presentation. And no matter how many times you do it, it's slightly terrifying. And I really relate to the musicians on stage who are loving what they're doing, but fundamentally they've got to deliver. And it's very, very exposing. And I get such a thrill out of it. But I think when I'm at Ronnie's, with a glass of wine, with a couple of friends, listening to my favourite band's Incognito, for example, I don't think I could ever be happier. Like, I literally feel happy in every sense of my imagination. And on holiday, lying in the sun with my music full blast, that's my happy place.
Fantastic. Now, you're also a board member of Childline, is that right?
I am. So I joined the board of NSPCC and Childline about 2 years ago. My old boss, actually in my radio days, Tom Tomasi, persuaded me, he was the chairman, to come and help them. And as you can tell, running lots of businesses and having children, my life is a bit hectic and busy. But again, because of my childhood, I really understood. You know, childhood didn't exist when I was in my teenage years. And if it had have done, I suspect I would have called it a number of times. So very cognizant of what they do, very much aware of, I mean, the pressure on children these days, whether it's anxiety about exams or whether it's fear of sexting and all the other things that are going on in our world right now, we have to protect children from and help educate them with. I'm deeply passionate about that. And I think that's been the speakers for schools as well. When I'm in those school assemblies and you can see sort of 14-year-olds looking at me thinking, who on earth are you and why on earth am I listening to you? Being able to connect with them is really, really important. So for Childline, it was their 30th year last year. We raised £1 million alone in a charity ball that we organised. I'm chairing that ball this year. I've got a lot of pressure on my shoulders to raise lots of money. But I think what's wonderful is you, at some of these events, you hear some of the people who are now in their 20s who did call or did email or did contact a Childline counsellor and have greatly benefited from that. And again, their life may have taken a good left-hand or right-hand turn as a result of it. And it really does move you to tears, but happy tears, in the sense of you can make a difference. You can touch an emotion in someone that allows them to escape something that's terrible, or direct them how to get out of something that's really not good for them. And it's a very palpable charity where you can really see the effects of what you're raising money for.
Well, incredible, worthwhile causes. Mm. Now, who has been the greatest driving force or influence in your life?
I think rather than a person, the fear of failure, which can be sometimes a hard taskmaster, but the fear of failure is probably my greatest driving force and influence, because I can't risk that. I can't have that happen to me again or my children. So bizarrely, my old chairman used to say to me, you're the sort of person that we would always back or invest in, because there is no option of failure for you, so you're never going to fail. I think from influential people, I had a wonderful boss who actually was very involved with Global. So Fru Hazlett, when she was involved as part of GCAP. So Fru was my boss years ago when I worked at MSM, which was the sister sales house for Capital Radio. And then she came back and was involved with GCAP as well. And what I loved about her was that she was achingly human and still is. You know, she showed her vulnerability. She would cry in the office. She would laugh in the office. She would tell you what was going on at home. She would tell you what was going on in business. And you felt so invested in her that you didn't want to let her down. And I remember working for her. I mean, I'd have gone over hot coals for that woman. And she knew the cleaner's name, and she knew every receptionist's name, and she knew every client's name. She made it her business to connect to the human element of everybody, and I had so much time for that, and she's taught me how to do that, so I'm very grateful to her. And then I think I had a brilliant boss. I worked on the agency side for a while. I was on the board of PhD, and I had a boss who everyone was a bit terrified of, called Morag Blazy, another woman who now works at Ubiquity. She was incredibly intellectual, which I'm not. I'm quite street smart, but I'm not particularly intellectual. And she was slightly harsh. And when I used to sell to them when I was in radio, she once sent an email around to the agency saying, can you please ask Kathleen Saxton from Capital Radio to not come to meetings dressed in her beachwear? Because I turned up in it was a suit, but it was shorts and a jacket. It was the summer. I was 22. You know, I had the figure for it in those days. So when I had my interview with her, I thought, she's never going to hire me. She absolutely loathes me. Well, she didn't. And we formed an amazing partnership at PhD. And what she also taught me is to only complain about things when you really, really feel that you either can do something about it or you really can't tolerate it. Because if you save it for those moments, normally something will be done. But if you're a constant whinger, because let's face it, the world's not perfect and none of us are perfect, there's always something to moan about. But her view is, if you only save it for the special occasions, the chances are you'll have greater influence than everybody else. And she was absolutely right.
Good influences there.
Mention Kylie though as well. Can I tell you that I've never seen Kylie Minogue until this Christmas. I went to her Christmas concert at the Royal Albert Hall. How that woman, who is small but mighty, carries that concert for two, she's got the singers and dancers, two whole hours she carries the whole thing. I was astonished and inspired by her. It made me think I've got to work on my core physical strength, because she's as fit as a fiddle, isn't she? My goodness me. So really inspired by her.
There we are. My goodness. Good tips there. So what are the trends for work in the future for digital content and communication? What do you believe?
Well, the biggest thing is we've got to get our heads around the fact that we don't need to be at our desk to be present. And I think that flexible working and just working in a completely different way is going to be absolutely the norm. And the millennials are showing us that. But I think we're going to see it more and more in even major leadership positions. So I think you're going to find flexible working, you're going to find people that are going to have more than one job, more than one career as well. I think people want plurality coming into their work life, in the sense that they would like to have more than one job, or they might want to do 4 days a week on something and a day doing something else. I think our acceptance that we're living longer, so to be out of, let's say, the media industry by the time we're in our mid-50s, which appears to be the average age we leave the industry. Well, if that was the case, and it's not going to change, I hope it might, what are we going to do for the rest of our time? Because we're not going to sit at home or play golf. So what are we going to do? I think the other thing we're seeing is on the equality finally coming in a bit better. So as a headhunter, I can tell you that it's not just women that want a 4-day week or want to leave early to pick up Charlotte from school. It's the men. And thank God that's happening. So we're finding more and more male leaders, as we're negotiating their entry into new companies, setting the tone for how they want to work. And I think the reality of people leaving to pick up a child, for example, but then logging back on in the evening is becoming the norm. Whether they believe that's right or wrong doesn't really matter. It's about, can we negotiate the way we want to work and still be incredibly dedicated to what we do? And I'm a big champion of that. I think it's really important. I do work very hard, but I think how you do it, we have to open our minds up to really thinking and much smarter about that, because we're not going to keep the talent that we want if we insist on doing it as if it was the 1970s.
Fantastic advice there. What would you say to other women wanting to walk a day in your shoes?
Well, I normally wear very high-heeled shoes, but I haven't got them on today because it's Friday and I'm a bit tired. Walking in my shoes, I think, listen, for all women, my sense has always been, again, you can be anything you want to be. That might be the most superb mother. It might be the most incredible nurse. It might be the CEO of a business. It doesn't really matter. It's about what you want to do, but you've got to have a strategy. So I've normally got a strategy in most things I'm doing that I'm trying to execute in some way. It worries me when women don't have a strategy of where they want to be headed and, you know, not having mentors around them. I've always had mentors around me. You grow in and out of them. But people that you can bounce off, who will give you some honest, neutral, loving advice and critique. You know, breathing our own air too much can be quite dangerous sometimes. We need to get perspective on things. So mentorship, ambition, but having the strategy. Where are you headed? What is it you really want to be doing? Even if it feels like a pipe dream, but how are you going to get there? What are the things you need to do to get there? And how can you slowly execute them, knock them down one by one, and you'll get there.
Fabulous advice there. Can we just read about your trusted tower? Is that okay about this? Because it's quite a beautiful quote, a very long quote on the wall here, but we'll just read the tail end of that.
So the lighthouse, I wrote that saying. Our business is called The Lighthouse because it's about something that's steadfast and safe and keeping you safe and illuminating the way. So the last part of it says, this trusted tower who silently holds all secrets demands of you only trust and courage. Over time, reassuringly familiar, and yet at dusk, she shines for you as if for the first time. To know she is there is to know where you are and together to decide where you're going.
Thank you. That's beautiful, isn't it? So thank you, Kathleen. We really appreciate your time influencing us to influence other women.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
This Influential Women's podcast is produced by Nikki Bannerman and Juliet Nichols, a collaboration since meeting through the Sound Women Network Group for Women in Broadcast.